The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Art Talk Golden Bay with Grant Knowles, where I talk to the artists about their art practice, what inspires them, their journey, and all their little secrets and passions. So come on a journey of discovery to find out firsthand the world of art, brought to you by the Art Vault Takaka. Good morning, kia ora. In the studio today, I have Robin Slow, who has been part of the Parampataka Matariki art process for the calendar this year. Kia ora, good morning, Robin.
Kia ora.
Thank you very much for coming in so cruelly early this morning and dragging yourself out of your studio. It's a great day though for a walk in the sun, and you know, it's always good to balance it out, isn't it, with art? You can spend too much time in the studio sometimes.
No, never get enough.
Okay. Yeah. Well, look, you've been part of the experience of the calendar this year. Tell me a little bit about the history of where you started with this project, because this is getting quite well known now.
Where I started with the project was with Chrissy coming to see me and talking about the calendar a couple of years ago and wanting to make to allow the opportunity to fundraise and those aspects for their Atarangi program. And so we sat down in the lounge at home and tossed around ideas of where we can go, and came up with this, and Matt was there with us, and away we went on that first one. That was really good, because in one sense it allowed me to research and develop the some ideas associated with Matariki, and learnt tremendous amount. This is what happens. This is a part of the process. Is you're continually learning something new all the time. You're continually developing, and it's not developing necessarily a technical side. It's more developing ideas and thought processes and ways to express that, to get ideas across, to communicate. And this was thought to be a good way to communicate with the extended whānau of Atariki, as well as the community, bringing them in together. And so all these aspects were tied in together. And so we did the first one, and it gave me, on another level, it gave me the opportunity to work with something I've always wanted to try with, was the scraper board, and working with the scraper board and playing around with that.
Can you just tell me a little bit about what is a scraper board? What is that technique, just quickly?
Well, it is an old English illustration board, and it's got a covering of cardboard or that aspect, and it's got a covering of China clay on it, and then over top of that China clay, there's placed a black Indian ink. So what you're doing then is scraping back that black ink to get your white. Now, that was used for print purposes. You know, the works could be reproduced quite easily because they've got a good, strong black and white and et cetera, et cetera. But I, being me, I suppose, I like to attack the work also using not just the knives or the blades and things like that. I'd use sandpaper and to get different effects and scraping back and then working on that. There's a white one. There's a whiteboard too. And found out that playing around with that, colour could be applied. And so then you started working with colour, introducing colour. All the learning processes you're going along and what you were doing. I mean, I did these years ago, 40, 50 years ago. But now it's sort of, this seems an ideal opportunity to play around with that.
And they looked great. They really came out well. Mm. The images are extremely strong, very powerful, because probably of that black and white. Mm. Also the symbols and the symbology within that. You obviously did research to come up with what was there for the symbols.
It's there for... That's developed through time and working again with others, and you know, it's sort of a process that you're learning on a continual basis that never stops, because attached with it, all those motifs and things like that are stories and histories and ways of doing things and ways of being, etc. And it becomes a part of you. It's not separated from you. Can I put it that way?
Yep.
And so those parts, when you're working on something, once you've got, you see, Māori art always has a narrative. It has a narrative, you know. I mean, when you go back, to my training years and years ago, I remember John Coley and them saying to me, art shouldn't have a narrative. It's playing with one form against another form. It's colour against colour. You're talking in complete abstraction. And I've completely rebelled against that, completely, because there's a whole different way of being and working with artists of Māori artists and carvers and ngātoi and things like that. It all has a narrative, a story, a reason for putting that mark there or doing what you're doing, whether it's just to enhance a piece of work. But you've only got to look at the symbolism that even goes through with a taiaha or even your moko and the motifs. It's not just... It's the intertwining of a beauty and a form and those ideas to enhance it. So, where do we end up?
Well, it's good to break the rules. I think it's really good to break those rules. And it's the same as breaking the rules of thirds. When I see something that's very, very strong, but it's broken those rules of thirds a little bit, not necessarily all of it, I go, great, well done. So, you know...
Are you always breaking rules? Most rules you're trying to break are your own ones that you've made in your head.
Yeah.
And you're saying, why am I doing that? Why is it constructed that way?
Well, it's great coming from an ex-school teacher. I love it. It's very important, you know.
Yeah, you've got to break those, and you've got to... But you see, in But first of all, in breaking them, you have to know why they're there in the first place.
Yep.
And that's the same with Māori art. It's not just a freedom to do what you like, how you like, or anything else. There are reasons for that form, and there are reasons for those motifs. That's part of the narrative. And you're working within that. It's a very interesting. But I didn't set out to do that.
No.
It happens within the methods of working that you're working in, and it was like these scrapable pieces. That happens. You were breaking rules all the time.
So how long did the scraper board, how long did that series take you, approximately?
It's very hard to say, because one piece would take longer than another piece, or in between times you were doing something else you were trying to work. It's probably about couple of months.
Yep, okay.
Just working on that.
Well, it certainly had an impact, and people responded extremely well to it from the feedback I've heard. And so they obviously approached you to do it again, or did you offer?
It was because, you know, you're working with Matt as well.
Matt Tate.
Yeah. And he's brilliant. You know, a very shy, I would put. He's not out there, but he's absolutely knows what he's doing and things like that. And I remember we were talking about even the font on that. On the Maramataka, and then he said, I said, what I really would love to do is to go back to some of the old ways of actually producing font, like this one that's used for Parihaka. You see, there's another story, and you can go on there. And said, so when he was putting the calendar together and the design process, he created this font to go on it, just little things like that. And it was absolutely perfect. So off he did that and laid all the calendar out and things like that. All I was doing was playing around, you know, having fun. he was doing the hard work on putting that together.
You were having fun doing what you love best.
Oh, that's right. You know, one of the things is that with scraper board, you can actually put it onto a board and then you can go in and have it sitting in front of it. Take it out of your studio, have it sitting in front of you on your lap, and you can just work away, and you can hold a conversation with somebody, or you can actually talk to your partner who you probably haven't spoken to for the last 10 hours and you've all been in the next room to each other, that sort of thing. And it's important.
Yeah.
Do that sort of. So, dear Matt, that's happened. And then when this one, the first one that I did, was involved with, happened, then Chrissy and Matt were coming to again, and Matt, it was all his skills and things like that, we were talking and it came up, what's the purpose again of this? What is the real purpose? And I said, for me, it's a communication, but it's to deal with aspects of Māori toi, and therefore it should be done in a process that enhances that and not necessarily for an individual to do. I mean, it's very nice and to have that avenue to work from originally, but really what we should be doing is working in a cooperative manner. Where should it be coming from? It should be coming from the marae. And so this is the working through and discussing these together, came up with the idea that originally it started off with Matt and myself, and let's expand this, let's have a wainanga where we actually get several people together and just explore the possibilities of what we can do for the calendar based on Matariki and putting that down. So that's what we did.
So how did you choose these people? How did that part of it?
How did we choose?
Or did they, yeah.
Well, there were members of Atarangi.
Yep.
Who, I mean, some were involved in, had been previously involved with art making and everything else together. But we did not throw it wide open.
No.
Initially, because we didn't know how we could handle numbers or whatever. By having just, you know, who do you think is a possibility? And then you'd ask somebody and talk to them about it, and they say, can I bring someone? Yeah. Or, and it ended up to be granddaughters of someone, as well as, it was a real whānau approach in that sense. I think it needs expanding. I mean, the process has been set up now. Why not do it every year? Why not do it a couple of times a year? Not necessarily for maramataka, but the process there of working together, exploring aspects with a range of people. I mean, in the workshop at the marae, the kukere there, there was children about 8 or 9, and then there was, you know, great grandparents, and the whole range was there. Both male, female, people that had ended up by exploring art in previous lives. And thinking of Shane and his carving skills. And all coming together, sharing, what do you know? What do I know? Has this, having a way of working. And that's what happened. We just, here's a technique, we play around, it involves printmaking, it involves mark making with paint, or it involves all sorts of things that you can add on. Let's see what happens.
It's a true collaboration, really, isn't it?
It was.
Mm.
And you know what? Not only was it extremely worthwhile and a great learning process, but it was joyous. You know,
yep.
it it was a way of going, releasing things that and allowing the joy to come through and just say, okay, this is for this weekend that we spent there. And then we took, you know, work away, sorted it out, sometimes added to it, sometimes, you know.
Chopped it up.
Oh, yes.
That's a brilliant part of the story. I love that.
Dear Rose, I was trying this printmaking and on acetate and monoprints and got these colours, and they weren't, in her head, they weren't working well for her. And she said to me, this is not working. And I said to her, well, see what can happen. I mean, there's others here. So she handed it to Jocelyn and cut it up, and Jocelyn wove the pieces together. And then when they were woven together, again, telling the story and things like that, then we came along and added other pieces on top of it. So that's a process. Yeah, never mind. Chrissy saw it and took it and framed it. And had it framed on those pieces. It wasn't in the calendar, but she framed it. And, yeah. And it's a lovely piece, and it's got memories all in it.
Yep. It's one of the striking pieces in there, partly because it's got more colour than some of the others. That's another quick question, is the black. There's a lot of black in it, and what were the reason for being so much black?
I mean, that's probably, you know, me. Oh. It's me, because I always work when I'm painting. When I'm painting, I start off, I paint all my canvases black.
Okay.
And because it's another story. There you go. That's the way that you work, because Te Kore, from Te Kore, you've got the light coming.
Yeah.
And so you're adding the light.
Yeah.
And you're working through from that process.
The opposite process. So what a lot of people do is adding the dark, and you're right.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then you discover certain paints only react on the black and not on the white, and they have that iridescent effect and things like that. And you say, right, okay, I'm on the right track now. This is just another tool, if you like, in your storytelling. But I've trying sometimes. This is on a personal level, moving out from the black and using a kokowai red. Mm. I used to use a lot of kokowai and things like that, but I'm going back to using the kokowai on the background and then coming forward again. But you see, for me, I don't know, it's always, I wonder what if. And why do you do that? I mean, like, I use a lot of gold leaf at times. Why do you use that? Well, that started off because I, again, wanted some motif that represented Golden Bay. And I'd heard the stories of Māori and the gold mining. And then you have Golden Bay itself. It was, you know, this is part of the name that it sits with. Never mind the old name being Mōhua. But I wanted this to reflect as part of Māori stories within this area as well.
Yeah.
And so I started that. I put some down. First of all, I had to ask my son-in-law, because he uses a gold leaf all the time. And I had to ask him how he did it and what it was doing and things like that. And we put it down, and the painting was on an easel, and it was had changing light. And when you put gold leaf down on that changing light, what happens, if you look at it one time, it's one thing. It goes back. The gold leaf seems to move back into the picture. As the light changes, the gold leaf comes out and the background withdraws. And I like that shifting. I like that shifting and that play. So it depends on where you're looking, how you look, all that sort of thing. And so that came into it, and it was based on simple things like, what's the name of the place?
Yeah. And again, so Mahua, that's the name we have now. I see a lot of birds in your work, strongly, and again, that reflects what we see around here with the birds, the bird life, which is very rich.
Yes, it could be richer.
Oh, yeah.
but Manu are connectors.
Mm.
And they connect between one realm and the next, between Papatu and Nuku and Ronganui. They bind together. But, I mean, when you go back, who were the original inhabitants of this place?
Yeah, of course, Manu.
Yeah. And so, and you see them in all, just watch Tui.
Mm.
If you watch Tui, you attach all those human traits to it, you know. I can stand on my back doorstep some mornings and the Tui's are having a fight between themselves, and they swoop low, and you know, I've had them touch the top of my head, you know, going right through, and the incredible sounds they make, the joyous song that they can sing, but also that loud, harsh. And when you start learning about these, and then you learn the old stories associated with them. Like the Tui is regarded as for his kōrero, his talking. But he was trained at one stage. He used to put them in train to speak.
Yep.
And it's not just one of those fairy stories that go, saying, this is what happened, and they can recite karakia. They could do all those. They could welcome people onto the marae. Or they could warn people that were coming onto the marae. So they have all those. But when you look at some of the stories that go, you know, he was the guardian of the doorway between the 11th and 12th heaven. Now, the 12th heaven had all the esoteric knowledge. So he was there. And these are the fascinating, wonderful stories that interlink and go through. So you're taking your Tui, then you're going through esoteric knowledge and understanding and that sort of things. And that doorway, the Pumotomoto, and that the Pumotomoto, it leads you to things like the Pumotomoto is the instrument, is also the name of the long instrument that the Tūhonga would actually play into the fontanelle of children and into the and into the hapu, the pregnant woman passing, and he would chant whakapapa karakia, all those aspects all be chanted, so pre-birth, all those things. And you think, isn't that, you know, the fontanelle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Parting. Wow. So
the spiritual, yeah.
You get this chain of events. So when I paint a tui or working in a tui in a certain situation, it becomes a carrier of that information. It's dealing with that. It's not a tui for a tui. No. Or it's not things. It's carrying that story.
So going back to the hui at the marae, and you probably, as a collective, sat around and told stories like this as part of that growing, and that's where a lot of the symbology comes from. However, you know, I've had a few people ask me at the exhibition, oh, it'd be nice to know what this means and what that means. Personally, I'm like, I don't have a problem with it, you know, with no explanation, because I think art should speak for art and that's enough. But at the same time, I also think sometimes it would be nice. So it's a two-way thing, right?
It draws people in, and hopefully it draws people in for them to find out.
Yep.
And it's a process of finding out. But please, don't phone me and ask.
No.
It's a funny thing, because in relation to that, I've had people purchase work from 15, 20 years ago. And you get a phone call or an email, I purchased this painting and things, and think, can you tell me a little bit more about it? So they want a bit more of the story. And that's fine. That's lovely.
Sure.
That's lovely. But it causes difficulty, because they'll give me the name of work and the description of it, and I have about 3,000 or 4,000 images sitting on my computer, and trying to find out which one they had 15, 20 years ago can be a little bit difficult at times, and then to go back to the story of where you were at that particular time can be.
Yep, it's a process, and that's what you have to keep remembering. It's a process, and what you did yesterday is not what you're going to do tomorrow.
You've moved.
Yep.
You've moved. Your thinking has moved. Your understandings have moved. And your directions are moving at the time. Otherwise, you'd be repeating the same thing all the time.
So with the paintings that were done from the Maramataka, are they actually specifically around the stories of Matariki? And were they around the stories of the seasons?
Both.
Yep.
Both. And bringing, you know, we did have some remarkable people there. Hamawira Rob, bringing in Shane. I mean, he's carver, trained as carver. All those in this there at the same time, and it's sharing backwards and forwards.
Yep.
It's not what do you know and what do I know. It's just talk and going through.
Yep.
And the best thing that I can do on those situations is to sit back and just listen and see where you go to, where it goes to from there.
Of course, and that's for all of us. I think communication is about listening as much as it is about sharing, talking, you know, and we do forget that one a little bit, don't we?
Yeah. Or spotting the tohu, spotting the signs. Great believer in tohu signs and spotting them. And that comes across in kōrero too, you know, people talking, and it's amazing what you pick up and what's there.
I'm excited. I mean, I've seen the art, and I've seen it up close, and I've seen it in the calendar. But of course, a reproduction in a calendar is only a reproduction. Yeah. It does make a huge difference when you actually go in there and see the real deal. I mean, that's always going to be the way. And I mean, how many images we've seen of the Mona Lisa? Yeah. It's always going to be the real deal that sparks our interest. And you know, I know there's a few people who have said, "Oh, how about, you know, good quality prints and blah blah blah." And we're not going to go there. But you know, when you've got an original like that, it's a very special thing, and I think that is something to, you know, for those people who have purchased one, that is amazing, isn't it? Really, because they are going to hold a bit of something quite special, and that seasonal thing. That seasonal thing is to me what it's actually about, because that's the thing we see, that's the thing we participate in, is the way the changing seasons, the way the way the world works, right?
That's the whole construct of the Maramataka piece itself, and that's a very interesting journey in talking, because the calendar itself, I mean, they did a wonderful job. Matt did an extremely wonderful job in putting all that together. And, I mean, as Kapil said, you've really got with this, if you're untrained, if you like, you've taken for granted all these years that Gregorian calendar, isn't it? The one that we... And then you actually have a different slant. I mean, this is what life's all about anyway, putting a different slant on things or a different way of looking at the world. And so you've got to go through those processes as well.
I think I personally think, you know, starting at the middle of the Gregorian calendar, May Gregorian calendar, and not following the months that the Gregorian calendar does is actually a really brave thing to do, because it's so outside our normal interpretation of it. And 13 lunar cycles, again, it's the natural order of things. Those are the things I think are so important in this.
They are, but I know we've got the Maramataka is sitting on our wall at home. We have no other calendars, but we don't need them, because, I mean, this one can be just as easily read on all fronts.
So how did the names, how did the pictures relate to each of those? Because they don't relate to a month. They don't, you know, so you...
No.
Are they seasonal? Are they... Because they are in a 13 lunar cycle, so that lunar cycle, those 13 lunar cycles is... I mean, how did that part of it work? Because that's a little bit technical for me to get my head around.
I think in some cases they were generic, in the sense that if you take the story of Matariki and what some of those seasons apply in relation to the Whetū, the stars there, and how they govern, if you like, and the roles that each individual star, the children, play in the lives of and of tangata, of people, how, you know, some of the stars are related to the tuna. This is all part of living. Some are related to water, fresh water, others to sea water. So you've got these combinations, and if you look on some of those works, you will see the relationship to those quite clearly. But if you're having an understanding or learning about Matariki, you see how that fits. that in itself is a whole cycle. See, the stories within stories within stories, and go on this journey and way. So, yeah, that's all in there.
Robin, thank you so much for explaining this. This is good stuff, because I know a lot of people have got the Kala, they've got the Maramataka. It's good to know the process and the art behind it and the people behind it and how it actually is formed. So I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy studio to to spend some time with me this morning to do this, to have this chat.
No, that's good, because I think it's these people, and I hope will take, or the whānau will take it on board and continue that process, not just for the production of Maramataka, but for the process of exploring exploring visually where they stand. It's a bit like learning te reo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's another language, if you like.
Yeah,
it's official. It's another language, and you're learning it, and it's an ongoing process. And for Atarangi whānau, it's always an ongoing process and learning. And blessed be those that and join in and use that avenue to develop skills. Is the wrong word, isn't it? Because you end up by thinking in a totally different way.
Understanding?
And understanding, yes, and developing and ideas.
Mm. Thank you, Robin. I do appreciate your time this morning. That's Robin Slow. Thank you for your company today. You've been listening to Art Talk Takaka with me, Grant Knowles. We've been talking to artists about their inspirations, passions and journeys. Art should comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. Brought to you by Art Vault Takaka.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.